My name is Sarah Robinson, and I'm the host of BBS Radio's newest talk show, Conscious Creating, which is in fact making its debut tonight. I'll be here with you every Thursday night from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific for a one-hour interactive program exploring the creative process of people who make art to create awareness in themselves and others. My career in the performing arts, which we'll discuss later tonight, led me to the realization that conscious creating can in fact become a vehicle for spiritual awareness, healing, and transformation. I'll be interviewing a series of distinguished guest artists from the fields of dance, film, music, television, theater, and the visual arts to discuss their experiences with art making and how it's led to transformation for them personally and or to society at large. You're invited tonight and every night to take part in this in every segment by calling in to ask questions, to seek guidance, or request support for your own artistic endeavors. You can reach me by calling toll-free, and this is a new number, at 1-877-876-5227. Or if you don't get through on that line, you can always try 1-530-876-3222. Now, I'm told that the lines can get a little busy, and in fact, I hope they will. But I encourage you to hang in there until you get through. Our producer will let me know you're on the line, and then we'll begin to chat. Your input is essential to the success of this show, and I really want to hear from you. Well, I'm going to start out tonight by talking about conscious creating. I'm sure you're curious about this topic. I mean, what is conscious creating? Well, let's take a look at the phrase by breaking it down. The word conscious must have something to do with consciousness. I mean, how do we define that one? I'm not even going to try. Conscious, as a derivative of the word consciousness, can mean a lot of things, but for our purposes, let's just define the term by describing what it's not, okay? Sort of giving the antonym, namely unconscious. If you're conscious, you're awake, either physically or metaphorically. If you're unconscious, you're not. A physically unconscious person might be in a coma or deep sleep, experiencing the world of the subconscious. Metaphorically speaking, an unconscious person is operating mechanically, you know, out of habit, following the values of the masses, making decisions out of a sense of obligation. I'm sure this is where addictions come in, right? Okay, so now we're going to turn to creating. Creating, we know, is the present tense form of the verb to create. Most of us would agree that to create means something like to bring something into being. We might also be tempted to throw in some adjectives to flesh out the word something, you know, like original or unique. So let's try to bring something original into being. Kind of like an inventor, right? Good. So far we have conscious creating, could be roughly translated as bringing something original into being in an awake state. Wow. Sounds kind of close to an act of God. Good. Genesis, that kind of thing, right? You know, this is sounding a little weird, so I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, now, why would this person, namely me, call a show conscious creating, interviewing artists who supposedly create consciously? Is she claiming that artists are God? Is she one of those New Agers who claim that we are co-creating with God? Well, frankly, I don't like labels, and I'm not fully prepared to answer those questions at this point. But what I do know is that in my experience of art making over the past 20 years, or so, I've come to believe that I am answering some kind of an internal call to use myself, you know, this particular mind-body organism, as a vehicle for creation, and that the more awake I am, both literally and figuratively, the better the product. You might ask, better how? Well, better in the sense that my art becomes more truthful and original, not just some carbon copy of someone else's vision of what is acceptable. Better in the sense that it's more satisfying. The very act or process of creation becomes joyful rather than the praise from the product, which many artists are attached to. And better in the sense that I become more aware of who I really am as I engage in this dance of creation with open eyes and open heart. Now, I've asked you to call in tonight with any questions or ideas that you might have for this show, and the number is 1-877-876-5227 or 1-530-876-3222. I'm looking forward to your calls. Okay, so I'm going to take a little bit of time now to talk about me. You probably read my bio on the webpage for this show, but that's really kind of stuffy PR material written by publicists. Since I will mostly be conducting the interviews, talking about other artists, I thought some of you might be interested in my story. After all, it's my firm belief that that's what we do as artists, is tell stories. So here's mine. I was born in Memphis, Tennessee on August the 12th, 1960. Now, it was a little odd from the beginning because my mother was 21 years my father's junior. Dad had left his hometown of Chattanooga, Tennessee at the age of 18 and lived in various cities, including the French Quarter in New Orleans and Greenwich Village in New York City back in the 1950s. He attended Columbia University and then went off to even the South Pacific during World War II. But by 1966, he had decided to return home with his family. My mother, my new brother, is 2.5 years younger than I and me. I was an imaginative, independent child and somewhat of a drama queen. I can remember vividly having my brother sitting in front of the television watching his favorite show and prancing into the room, standing right in front of him and saying something like, you know, you have to see my new show, and if you don't, you won't eat dinner tonight. And I really intimidated him, and he had to watch me dance and sing and all of that. I started dancing at about the age of 3, took music lessons at 6, made my stage debut at 11. I kind of saw life as a movie. I don't know if you ever felt that way as an artist. I daydreamed a lot, and sometimes, in fact, I think I could see the gaffer with the lights over me and the sound man with the microphone dangling, and I would just sort of act out my life, and I didn't understand that. In fact, I thought I was really strange when I got older because I had those feelings as a child, and now that I'm beginning to understand life as an illusion and life is this big movie, it kind of makes sense. I'd like to hear what you think about that. Why don't you call me at 1-877-876-5227. In 1968, my parents divorced. Now, this was very, very unusual in the time and place where I lived. And even more unusual, my mother left my home, and my father raised us as a single parent. My father was a civil rights activist and a feminist and very involved in all kinds of activities in Chattanooga in the 60s. And so I had a very unusual upbringing. By about 1973 or so, I started studying dance and acting with my first important teacher, Nancy Lane Wright, in her dance theater workshop. Her husband, I believe, was a psychologist who had moved to Chattanooga with his practice, and even though she had had a big career and studied with Martha Graham and all kinds of people in New York, she came and put her roots down in Chattanooga and has really produced some quite well-known artists. I hope to have her on the show at some point. I began to be cast in leading and supporting roles in musicals and plays, and started writing poetry and stories. By the time I was 16, I wanted to go to New York City. I really didn't want to go to college. I wanted to graduate from high school and go straight to Broadway. But my father, because he had been peripherally in the business in New York, suggested that I get a traditional education first to fall back on. So he took me to New York, took me to Greenwich Village, and introduced me to friends who had been in off-Broadway productions, you know, for the last 30 or 40 years and had roaches in their apartment and were living a life of debauchery, and wisely showed me what my life would be like and convinced me that I ought to get an education. Wanted me to go to Vassar in Poughkeepsie, New York, and I said, no way, didn't want to be out in the middle of nowhere, although now I realized the theater department there was wonderful. I rebelled and stayed in the South and went to a women's college in Decatur, Georgia. My plan was to finish college, where I majored in philosophy, and pursue a career in the arts. But I did finish college, but I was stung by this yellow jacket from Georgia, the Georgia Institute of Technology, if you know it, Georgia Tech, in 1978 when I met him, and I never recovered. We married in 1982, and I followed him to Houston, Texas, where he was working. Now, I really want you to interrupt me and give me some feedback on yourself so I don't have to go on all night about myself. So call me at 1-877-876-5227, or I'll just continue with my bio. Well, when I moved to Houston, Texas at the age of 22 and I got married, I made some initial attempts to work in theater and kept up my singing and dance at the Houston Ballet Academy, but I found I lacked the self-confidence to take the kind of rejection I encountered and gave up. I often tell wannabe actors that it takes the ego strength of an aged rhinoceros to stay in this business because it's a business of rejection. And I really didn't have that kind of ego strength at that time in my life. I wonder if any of you have ever felt that way. I decided to find theater or drama in a classroom setting by becoming a teacher. I quickly earned a master's degree in education and did a lot of graduate work in literature and history at the University of Houston, and then got a job that was quite exciting, teaching world history to very bright students at a private school in Houston. Of course, I kept involved in amateur theater and singing groups and would read my poetry at local venues from time to time. In 1987, a real highlight was the opportunity to sing for Her Royal Highness Elizabeth II at Royal Albert Hall in London. It was quite an event, lots of pomp and ceremony. The Archbishop of Canterbury was there, and it was really, really quite an event. So at this time in my life, in my 20s, my mid-20s to late 20s, my life was pretty much on autopilot. You know how it can get, going back to that feeling of being unconscious. I did what was expected of me and not really much more. The only joy I found in my life was my husband. I knew I was supposed to be doing more than this. I knew that there was more to life and more to me than living by rote and other people's expectations. So after about 3 years of classroom teaching, I resigned in 1989 to become a full-time mother to my first child, Sarah Claire. And this is when my awakening began. I began to experience what some have called the dark night of the soul, a depression that I couldn't explain. I mean, I had everything, education, money, marriage to a man I loved and a beautiful baby. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Why was I so unfulfilled and numb and really even just miserable? Finally, I entered psychotherapy with a wonderful woman named Hope Nordmeyer, with whom I worked intensely for the better part of 3 years. We were able to identify childhood issues of emotional and physical abuse, which explained a lot of my unconsciousness and my lack of creativity in life in life at this particular time, upon the event of having a child, I began approaching this problem of needing to heal in the way I approached a lot of things with my head. And so I began reading widely in the fields of psychology and philosophy, religion, spirituality. And what I noticed is, in doing this, the eggshell of my life, the life I had been living up to this point, began to slowly crack open. I made a lot of progress and, in fact, named my younger daughter, who was born in 1993, Grace, you know, after the theological concept, because I did feel that there had been a lot of grace in this process of healing and renewing my creativity. The healing wasn't complete, but I was making progress. And then in 1995, when Grace was only two, I felt a surge of confidence. And gosh, how old was I? About 34, 35 years old. And I felt confident enough to return to my first love, which was performing. Unfortunately, I still looked youthful. I fell into that sort of 28 to 35-year-old category that we all need to keep as women in order to be marketable as leading ladies. I still looked youthful and was quickly signed with the top modeling and talent agencies in Houston. I resumed my study of acting to just sort of get back on my game with gusto, with a wonderful teacher and actor. You may know him from his film work and films like Powder, Brandon Smith, at Actor Studio. And to my surprise, I began landing job after job and making a steady living as an actor in a tertiary market, which is quite a strange thing. I mean, I didn't have national name and face recognition, but I was real big inside the 610 loop. Anyway, in the next 6 years, I worked on over 100 productions in print, radio, television, film, and theater. I developed a partnership with the renowned theater actor Annalee Jeffries and assisted her in managing a studio for professional actors in Houston. I coached acting privately, began directing and producing. You know, things couldn't have been better, right? Well, not exactly. I mean, I had confidence, yes. I was awakening, yes. But I was not fully fed. Coming into the business rather late, in a tertiary market, you know, Hollywood wasn't exactly banging on my door. And I was aging. An aging leading lady. What could be worse? I didn't feel old. There were only a few lines around the eyes. The crowning blow came one day when I showed up on the set of some industrial film I had booked on a headshot submitted by my agent, and they sent me home telling my agent that I was too old. Well, I'll tell you, I marched into her office that day with my denim miniskirt and low-cut t-shirt and said, "Look at me. Does this body look too old?" She, an aging Vanna White, replied, "It's not your body, honey. It's the face." Can you imagine? If you're an actor and you're out there, you probably can, a female actor. To make matters worse, I discovered that one of my former students, this 25-year-old mini-me, was sent in to replace me. It was the first gig, and I had introduced her to my agent. That was it. I would prove that I wasn't too old. In the ensuing months, I fell face forward into a midlife crisis that nearly wrecked my life as I knew it. Took the death of my father in 1999. My mother had already died about 5 years earlier, and closing down our family home in Chattanooga for me to wake up and become conscious. Isn't that strange? Something has to die to be reborn. I think that's a theme that you can probably relate to. If you'd like to tell a story about that, why don't you call me at 1-877-876-5227. I'm waiting to hear from you. So I'll continue with my story until I do hear from you. Well, after my father died and we cleaned out the house, four stories of it with, I mean, my father was like Fred Sanford. I mean, he just kept everything, and we had to go through it because we were afraid we'd throw away a deed to a house or something. My husband and I took a long, hard look at our lives and agreed to embark on the second journey of our lives and return to the city where we met, which is Atlanta, Georgia, where I am now. Soon after relocating to Atlanta with a burning desire for anonymity, I just wanted to get away from the business and strange people that, you know, bothered you and that kind of thing, and wanted to embrace normalcy and ordinary life. I created a sacred space for myself in one of the rooms of our home, that's where I'm sitting now, and began consciously creating for the first time in my life. My spiritual and personal awakening has been and remains a process. It certainly wasn't an event. It happened over a period of time, and I would say it's still happening. Letting go of fear and disciplining myself to go within and connect with my higher power, whom I call God, the source of my creativity, is constant work, constant work. But since I began to regain consciousness, my creative endeavors have been joyful and rewarding on a soulful level. I've written four plays in 5 years, two of which have been produced. I've not marketed any of my plays at this point. People just kind of show up out of nowhere and ask me if they can do them. I've developed and taught workshops and given talks on the art of conscious creating. I never marketed this work. People just form groups and ask me to show up and teach. I don't have a website, though I'm building one now, and lead a very ordinary life with my children, husband, and a close circle of friends. I'm grateful I've been able to work without fame, because I have friends who are famous, and it's difficult to manage sometimes. As I tend to be an introvert and enjoy my solitude, I do have extroverted tendencies, but generally I like to be alone, get my energy from being alone. And I want nothing more in my life right now, I need to tell you, than what I have. I can honestly say that I'm content. When I was asked to host this talk show, I hesitated, not wanting it to become a distraction from my own art. But finally, when I saw how receptive my fellow artists were to being interviewed, and I kind of took a poll, you know, before I agreed to do it, I agreed, and I guess sort of saw this show as an opportunity that I needed to respond to. There must be a need for this type of exploration, where so many people wouldn't be saying yes to the interviews. My desire is to create a show which will inspire and support all of you, the listeners, in bringing consciousness to your creating, because we are all of us creators, whether we're parents, business people, laborers, children, or artists. We must all remember how to reclaim our truth and step lively to the dance of conscious creating, and I want this show to be a place where we can discuss this. So please call in at 1-877-876-5227. I'd love to hear your thoughts on conscious creating and what you're doing in your life right now. I'll move on now to the interviews and the structure for this show. After tonight, as I said, most of the segments on conscious creating will be interviews with prominent artists. I've only been at the task of requesting these interviews for a week now, and I am amazed at the response. I've only been turned down once, And that was by a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright I know personally, who tells me she's out of the yakking business. I guess she yacked too long. Imagine that. I mean, I'm a playwright, and I don't think I'll ever be out of the business of yakking. It's so much fun. If you call in, we could experience that together. In the next couple of months, we'll be talking with a list of remarkable individuals who really get what conscious creating is all about. And I'm so excited to be bringing them to you. In fact, we'll all be on a journey together, you, me, and our guests, to discover what this conscious creating is all about and how it's affected others. So be sure to join me for the interviews with all of these guests. Next week, on May 4th, Thomas Moore, writer and musician, is an internationally acclaimed writer and lecturer in the areas of archetypal psychology, mythology, and the imagination. He's the author of 11 books, and I have probably each and every one of them right in front of me on a shelf. One of them, I think, has the front cover torn off because I've read it so many times. And I think that's Care of the Soul. So he's the author of 11 books and numerous tapes, including the New York Times bestsellers, Care of the Soul and Soulmates. He tells me that he lives soulfully with his wife and two children in New Hampshire, where he composes music and writes. You can find out more about Dr. Moore on careofthesoul.net. On May 11th, we'll be joined by Mary Carol Nelson, who is the author of over 11 books, including The Legendary Artist of Taos and Artist of the Spirit. I talked with Mary the other day on the phone, and she sounds really nice. She's an older woman. She's been working for long, long years as a teacher and as an artist, and I think you'll really enjoy her. She has such a zest for living. Her artworks are mixed media, dimensional shrines of transparent plexiglass, which are often illuminated. She spent over 20 years as a teacher and is the founder of the Society of Layerists, which is a very important movement in American art, in multimedia. So it's the Society of Layerists in multimedia. She can be found at her website,
All I have to do is do exactly what I just did for each show host. It normally takes about 20 minutes per show host.
I'm sorry? Hello?
You ready? Okay. I'm not.
Oops.
Hello? I'm sorry, we had some sort of
I apologize for that.
I think we're about to go on break down for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then I'll continue discussing with you all of these wonderful guests that we'll have, along with some other information that I think you'll enjoy. Thank you. We're back now at Conscious Creating after a little break. Thank you for joining me tonight as we... I'm your host, Sarah Robinson, as we discuss lots of things, the show itself, what the intentions are for the show, and I was just, before the break, going through a list of interviews that we have. On May 18th, I'm excited to announce the appearance of Jerry Winstrom. He is a visual artist and a writer, and in 1979, Jerry Winstrom was a rising star in the New York art world until he destroyed all of his art, gave away all of his money and possessions, and embarked on an extraordinary spiritual journey which ultimately led to a return to creating art. He's the author of The Inspired Heart and the subject of the film In the Hands of Alchemy, The Art and Life of Jerry Winstrom. Looking forward to seeing him, or talking with him, as it were. You can find out more about Jerry and his art on his website, www.jerrywinstrom.com. On May 25th, we'll be joined by Stephen Halpern. In 1971, Stephen Halpern, PhD, began pioneering research exploring sound, consciousness and healing using brainwave biofeedback and Kirlian, which is aura, photography, which led to his becoming the world's leading composer and recording artist of music for relaxation, wellness, and sound health. For over 30 years, Mr. Halpern has promoted the transformative powers of music through his recordings, books like Sound Health, media appearances. He's been interviewed on 48 Hours, 2020, Oprah, and the workshops that he gives all over the country. You can find out more about Steve on www.innerpeacemusic.com. Another note, Steve was gracious enough to grant me copyright permission to use his music from the Chakra Suite, which you might know, as a lead-in and fade-out on our breaks and for this show in general. So next week, we'll have that up and running for you, and we'll have to thank Steve personally when he comes and talks to us. On June 1st, and I think I just confirmed this today, Judith Cornell, PhD, visits us. Dr. Cornell is the award-winning author of Mandala, Luminous Symbols for Healing. In 1979, she experienced a radical awakening which led to her pioneering work using art making to initiate awakening and healing. Her work blends the sacred art and spiritual science of the mandala with theories in quantum physics, Raja, Kundalini yoga, and transpersonal psychology. Dr. Cornell continues to create visual art, write, and conduct workshops while serving as assistant professor in transpersonal psychology at Holos University Graduate Seminary, founded by Dr. Norm Shealy, MD. Check out Judith Cornell on her website, www.mandala-universe.com. On June 8th, we have Pat B. Allen, PhD, who is an internationally recognized artist, writer, art therapist, and teacher, who says, quote, "For the past three decades, I have been mentored by the creative source," end quote. Dr. Allen is the author of Art is a Way of Knowing, which also sits on my shelf, and hundreds of articles and talks on an amazing range of topics, including her method, the art method she developed called Studio Process. In 1995, she co-founded the Open Studio Project in Evanston, Illinois, to make art guided by intention and witness and to be of service. Look for her new book, Art is a Spiritual Path, through Shambhala Publishing company. It was published in 2005. She can be found at www.patballen.com. And finally, we have June 29th, Natalie Goldberg. Now, I know you know Natalie. She's the author of 9 books, including the groundbreaking Writing Down the Bones from 1986, which started a creative revolution in writing practices in the U.S. In her book, Living Color, Ms. Goldberg explores her second art form, painting. Her lively watercolors are exhibited at Ernesto Mayans Gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She's been teaching seminars in writing as a practice for the last 30 years to great acclaim. In fact, I would love to take one of those seminars. Her latest book, The Great Failure, has just been released in paperback, and she has a newly released film, Tangled Up in Bob, about the life and art of Bob Dylan. Love to see that. Love to ask her how we can get a hold of it. Her website is www.nataliegoldberg.com, and she invites you to visit her site and sort of take a look at everything she's doing. Also, if you can offer any suggestions or contact information for future guests that you think sort of fit the profile of the people I'm interviewing, please feel free to email me at consciouscreating@comcast.net. You can assure the artist and their that their contact information will be held in confidence. It's only shared with my producer, and we both live with integrity and would never violate anyone's privacy. So no matter who they are, they can be sure that we'll keep their information safe, and we would surely love an introduction. Speaking of which, I would like to have an introduction with you, and I want you to call in tonight. Do so by calling 1-877-876-5227. I want to hear about what you're doing, the art you're creating, or maybe your life is just a work of art. We can discuss that and anything else you'd like to discuss. Well, moving along, I want to share with you some of the ideas for supporting your creative activities that you can begin to employ. This is a list that I made for the students in my workshops, and I just thought tonight might be a good opportunity for me to share some of those with you. Now, they're not original. They're ideas that I've, you know, come up with and other people have come up with perhaps simultaneously. So you may have heard them elsewhere, but it never hurts to hear them again. First, we need to make it our practice to finish what we start. Self-discipline is very, very important as an artist. I know a lot of playwrights I've met lately who tell me that they have 5 or 6 plays that are unfinished in their files. And I know how easy it is to be distracted and not to finish a work, but for me, it's very important, not only for the integrity of the work that I'm creating, but also just for myself so that I don't become frustrated and give up on a project. Secondly, we need to strive to understand our nature as artists. And a good way of doing that is by studying myths, fairy tales, and psychology. Many of you probably have heard the story about the woman who approached Albert Einstein when he was at Princeton and said, Dr. Einstein, what can I do to make my child as smart as you? What can I do to make my child a genius? And Dr. Einstein stopped in his tracks, turned around, looked at the woman and said, read him fairy tales. I'm sure fairy tales are important, and just as myths and psychology, because they tend to tap us into the archetypal images that inform us and help us understand who we are. So understanding our nature as artists is very, very important. another point I wanted to make on that is that sometimes actors, for example, will just read one acting tome after the other, or even writers, one book after another on someone's writing technique. And I used to advise my students not to do that. I mean, read Stanislavski, read Meisner, but put it down at some point and begin to read psychology books, begin to read novels, begin to read material that informs you about the state of the human spirit so that you can be truthful in the performances that you give. The third idea I have for supporting your creative activities is to spend time with nature. Nature keeps us grounded. In fact, I'm a gardening enthusiast. It's one of my passions. And I was out in my garden today and sat on a big stone bench and had my lunch and looked at my flowers. I won't say I talked to them, but maybe I did. And it's just so grounding after being at my computer and working and writing to go outside and put my feet on the earth and get my fingernails in the dirt and smell the rich hummus of spring. So I commend this to you, to get out in nature so that you can absorb images that you can use in your work. The fourth idea I have is to keep your work private for a while. When you're creating and birthing, privacy is really a good thing. Later there'll be time, you know, for detachment after you've finished a project and started another one. And at that point, you'll be better prepared for any unwanted responses that you might get. You really have to kind of protect yourself and protect your work when it's still attached to you. Look at animals in nature. A bird has to stay in its nest and be protected by its mother or its father until it becomes less vulnerable and can get out on its own. I like to look at my art that way. Even if I'm acting and developing a character, I don't want to talk about it too much. I don't want to bounce the ideas off people too much. I kind of just want to put it out there, and then if the director sees something that needs to change, she'll tell me. Here's another idea. And by the way, do call in and tell me what you think and who you are. I'd love to hear from you. 1-877-876-5227. We have about 10 more minutes on the show. Love to hear from you. Another idea I have for keeping your creativity alive is to accept nurturing, to allow other people to care for you. It's always good to practice a little healthy selfishness from time to time. If we don't take care of ourselves, and if we don't treat ourselves with compassion, you know, we're not going to have anything to give anybody else, not just in terms of emotions and love, but in terms of the energy that it takes to create. And you know, it takes a lot of energy to create art. Another practice that I've made a discipline is to take time each day to quiet my mind, to learn to turn down the static and the noise that's all around me. We're bombarded in our technological society, you know, with beepers and cell phones and sound bites and television and computer that makes noises, and we really need some time to just go within so that we know ourselves well enough and are in touch with the source so that we can use that energy to create our work. One good way to do this is to practice daily breathing, you know, conscious breathing, where we pay attention to the in-breath and the out-breath, and or meditation. Some people quiet the mind by journaling. That's certainly actually a legitimate practice. Another idea is to develop your intuitive nature and your innate sense of timing. Oh, this is so important, and I've learned lessons on this just recently. We have to learn to use our intuition so that we can know with whom to work or collaborate, when to work, and when to share our work with others. And if we don't listen to ourselves and know what feels right for us and live our truth, then we get into that unconscious state that we were talking about earlier, where we're just automatons. Very, very important. Here's one I love. To make a sacred space and a sacred time in your life. To create a place in your environment. And I know Julia Cameron talks about this in The Artist Way, and oh, lots of people. Virginia Woolf in a room of our own, of one's own. It's so important to have your own space. And when you create this place and make it beautiful and just the way you want it, your work can flow because your body and your psyche knows this is where it can happen. Not that you always work there, because certainly people like Natalie Goldberg tell us to get out and write everywhere and anywhere. And Julia Cameron in her book, The Right to Write, talks about that. But it's good to have a place that can be just like a little retreat for us. And along those lines, we need to set boundaries with potential intruders, you know, like loved ones or pets. I know my cats love to get up on my desk and jump on my mouse when I'm working at my computer. It drives me crazy. And sometimes I just have to put them out of the room. Here's another idea for supporting your creativity and your art. Let go, or learn to let go, of control and perfectionism. These are really our enemies. They come from a place of fear. We need to learn to respect the process of art making and just know that letting things come and then editing them later is the way. Have realistic expectations and try to work without a concrete goal in mind. The plans you have for your work may not be as big as those that God and the universe has in mind. Here's another one. Try to fight the depression cycle. We all know as artists that depression can come. I mean, it's a truism. It's almost a, you know, cliche, the suffering artist. The alcoholic artist, the dysfunctional artist. Fight it. Let go of the idea of the suffering artist. Take care of yourself when you feel yourself spiraling into the dark night of the soul. Surround yourself with people who are committed to you and committed to their own mental health and happiness. Eliminate those people from your path who bring you down. You have to really conserve your energy. I know I stopped watching television about 18 years ago. The only time I watch television is occasionally I'll just flip through the channels right before I go to sleep to anesthetize myself. Sorry. I know when I start interviewing television personalities, that'll come back to haunt me. But I just had to get away from the negativity. It just hurt my spirit and squelched it. Another idea is to allow your passion to flow in your work. Identify what your passion is. Creative energy can be very erotic, very juicy. Revel in it. Enjoy it. It's that eroticism that will keep you going and keep you coming back for more. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I particularly have the experience when I'm writing. And I latch onto an idea that just seems right, and I will literally tingle from my toes to my head. Have you had that experience? You're being shy and you're not calling in tonight. 1-877-876-5227. There's still time for a call or two. I'm going to stop with some of these ideas now and move to something that I wrote tonight about 5 or 10 minutes before we went on the air. This was something that just came to me. And then we'll close. Conscious creating. Creating art which will influence the masses should not be your goal. It should be the byproduct of the joyous experience of creating. Do not be concerned with what others think or whether or not you or your work is marketable. Just keep your mind on the work. The process is where the transformation occurs. In making art, you become more fully human, more aligned with your authentic self. You learn to see yourself in that which you create. This is true for the dancer, the actor, the musician, the visual artist, for everyone involved in the creative process. Your job is to listen and show up for the task of creating. Keep your ears clean and your eyes clear. Awaken to the source of all creation. You will be given everything you need in every moment of the creative process. Fear is your only enemy. It will rob you of your joy, your contentment, your desire to create. Trust that you're enough and that you have everything you need to do the work your heart prompts you to do. Make it your practice each morning when you awake to stand before the mirror in gratitude for your body, your mind, the tools with which you will create your day. Remember to keep your thoughts grounded in the moment and let your spirit soar. Offer yourself generously to the art. And it will yield to the passion of your soul, like clay in the palms of a sculptor. Come to the work as you come to your lover's bed, with the hot coals of passion burning. Make yourself vulnerable and assertive at the same time. Flow with the work and let yourself respond to its ebb and flow. You are a joyful creator. You are the author of a new beginning. You are the master of your intent. You are limitless in what you create. You are consciousness creating. I want to thank you tonight for being here with me and participating in the debut of Conscious Creating. I want to invite you to join me next week. Next Thursday night from 6 to 7 Pacific time with Thomas Moore, our first guest, and every Thursday night for as many weeks as we can keep this going. Again, thank you for being with me, and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.